The Rare Slot Podcast is part of the Booster Pack Network. For more TCG-related content, visit theboosterpacknetwork.com. Hosting for this show is sponsored by Category 1 Games, the go-to shop for all of your classic TCG needs. Find your favorites or discover something new at Category1Games.com.
Hello and welcome to Rare Slot. This is the show on the Booster Pack Network where we can have casual conversations about trading card games. My name is Rans, and on today's episode we're doing something a little bit different, and of course, a little bit casual. So today, I think if you've been following the trading card game industry for the last couple of years since sort of the COVID wave and stuff like that, you will have noticed that things have changed a little bit in our space. And what's happened is independent trading card games have sort of found a footing of their own, unlike ever before, through things like crowdfunding. Platforms like Kickstarter, Backit-Kit, GameFund are all hosting tabletop products nowadays where people can put up their ideas and find people in their gaming community to fund them. And obviously Kickstarter being the most of those, we're seeing a lot of trading card games come out in this independent wave, something that we've never really seen in trading card games ever before, at this quantity at least. And it feels like every other day there is a brand new trading card game hitting Kickstarter. And honestly, I do not have the time to keep up with them anymore. It has been an absolute struggle to be able to go on there every day and find out about the latest and the greatest things that innovators, players, people are trying to solve with their own trading card games, problems that other trading card games have, and things that they've been doing. So what I've done is I've actually been able to collaborate with a good friend of mine and fellow content creator, Peter from Card Game Crypt on YouTube, linked in the description, of course. And he's going to walk me through a couple of the games that he's been following and sort of playtesting and checking out over this episode that are worth watching in 2023. So we're going to count down his top five independent trading card games for this year. And I would love it because there's a couple of different reasons why I think this is valuable. First of all, it highlights some of the games that are in this space because there is starting to become a lot of noise. As I mentioned, every other day there is a ton of new trading card games being added to Kickstarter, and being able to identify which ones are worth following, which ones have potential to go somewhere, and which ones indeed can find their footing as an actual proper game, whether that is one that only services its customers via online services or finds its way into, you know, various local game stores, that's what we're going to find out. And the thing that I think is absolutely important as well is if you are a trading card game designer, another valuable thing is we can look at Peter's list and go and inspect those games and see what makes them stand out above the rest of the crowd. So without further ado, allow me to introduce Peter from Card Game Crypt, the YouTube channel. Again, linked in the description. Peter, how are you, bud?
I'm great.
So thank you so much for joining me today. And I can't wait to like count down this list because, again, as I mentioned there, I am absolutely swamped with the amount of trading card games that have come out over the last a decade now. I have been tracking trading card games, you know, way back to the original of their history. And we've seen more trading card games sort of released via crowdfunding than we had through the regular three-tier model, which is retailer, distributor, and sort of player before. So me keeping up with this is becoming a harder and harder task as every year rolls on, and I'm sure it's only going to get harder. But it sounds like you have been super invested in this indie trading card game space.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep up with them all. There's definitely a lot. Behind me, there's kind of some of the last 5 years stuff. And then there's probably like the same amount of games on these like two shelves from Kickstarter or like indie adjacent games.
Absolutely. So for those who are just listening to the podcast, if you can't see Peter's feed on video, he is surrounded by literally, I would probably say 3 or 4 dozen booster boxes or trading card game products or card game products. And they run the gamut from everything from Star Wars Destiny to Lightseekers to even some of these indie games that we're probably going to talk about today. And even some, if you're a regular listener to the channel or watcher of the channel, things like Genesis and a couple of those other games that we've featured on the show, at D-Spirits, etc. So let's jump into it. So what we're going to do, Peter, as we have agreed, we're going to count down your top five trading card games. But before we do, why don't you give us a little bit of a background as to, your history as a gamer, and most specifically a tabletop gamer, and even more specifically, a trading card game player.
All right. So I guess I've always played a lot of video games. I played Yu-Gi-Oh! When it first came out, I remember collecting Pokemon. This is probably very familiar. There's so many guests that have said similar things. I collected Pokemon, but then I actually started playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And then when I got like middle school-ish, I kind of dropped off of it. And then I rediscovered it in 2020, which is probably also pretty familiar. I'm like, oh, this is pretty neat. A YouTube channel called Team APS makes some really cool casual content, Yu-Gi-Oh stuff on YouTube. And I went from there straight off the deep end into like, every card game that ever existed. I'm like, oh man, you can go to YouTube and type in like Morrowind 12-hour review where they look at every pixel from that video game. But if you dot hack card game, you might find like one blog post about it from 15 years ago, and that's it. So I was like, oh man, there's a lot of untapped potential in talking about card games, I think.
I completely agree. Obviously, obviously trading card games have been my space for decades now. And my story is very familiar to yours. Obviously, you mentioned collecting Pokemon, playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Definitely played and collected both of those when they were, contemporaries in the playground and in the local game stores as well. And I love the fact that you called out Team APS there. And I will actually, if I remember, I will link them in the description. They are a ton of fun, that channel. I absolutely love the energy that those guys bring to not only Yu-Gi-Oh! But the card game space as well. I think, like many of the other channels, they might be starting to explore other games. I'm not 100% sure about that, but they are a Yu-Gi-Oh! Primary channel, but I love that as well. So obviously, I think you were a perfect sort of a perfect sort of attitude for what I love about trading card games is that it's not just about siloed games. It's not just about Pokemon. It's not just about Yu-Gi-Oh! It's not just about Magic. I'm not a Magic player. I'm not a Pokemon player. I'm not a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player. I am a trading card game player, and it's a genre that I love. And I really felt when I started what I'm doing, it didn't feel like there was any sort of unifying force that sort of collected all of that information into a single genre. So I love the fact that, after you rediscovered it in 2020, as a lot of people did during that COVID and pandemic and shutdown and stuff like that, I love the fact that you were like, no, I'm not just going to be about this game. I'm going to be able to be about exploring what this genre can offer.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so okay, so let's jump into your top five. Now, this is for 2023. These are the ones that have been revealed so far and have enough sort of information behind them to sort of, show us what they're all about. A lot of, these indie trading card games come out with very, very limited amounts of information about what the game is, whether it's even gameplay or, visualization or anything like that. But I would love to jump into your first top pick, number one to watch game for 2023 in this indie TCG space.
All right. So, a little bit about my list in general is I tried to stay away from the bigger ones that people might know. So there's no Grand Archive on this list. There's no Nostalgics on this list. I kind of wanted to go a little bit lower, except with the exception of my number five pick, where I picked Alestrals by the
So we'll
YouTuber A Drive.
Okay, so let's jump into Alestrals then. Again, as you mentioned, it is by a high-profile PokerTuber called A Drive, I believe, and he is a he he obviously has been making videos for years, and it sounds like this is a project he is super passionate about. They made over $1 million on Kickstarter when they launched, I believe earlier, I think in February or January or something like that. They did an amazing job. Sort of looks like a beautiful game. Let me ask you then, what is the theme of Alestrals for those who haven't heard of it?
Alestrals is like a monster collecting game. I've seen a lot of people look at it and go, "Oh, it's a Pokemon rip-off from the Pokemon YouTuber." Which is not at all what the actual game is, which is kind of why I also chose it, because you look at it and it does, yeah, it's got Pokemon type monsters, but the actual game is not.
Okay, excellent. So let's unpack that. So tell me about what those mechanics are like with Alestrals. So for those who haven't seen it, it does sort of feature sort of a monster catcher sort of like genre, whether it's a Pokemon or Digimon or Monster Rancher or any of those sort of games. But tell me about what makes Alestrals special and what is different about the mechanics between, as we mentioned before, the creator is a very high profile Pokemon YouTuber. Tell us about how the mechanics sort of differ from the Pokemon card game and what he's brought to this space that that you find interesting mechanically.
Right. So the mechanics of Alestrals are it's a creature battler game, kind of standardish. You summon your Alestrals. You attack your opponent's Alestrals, you attack them directly. You can get rid of your Alestrals for bigger Alestrals. Might start sounding a little bit familiar. Alestrals is actually capturing like 2009 Yu-Gi-Oh, like the GX era of Yu-Gi-Oh, which I thought was interesting. Most people go for like after that or maybe even before that, but it's a unique spot. Another one of the interesting mechanics in Elestrals is the win condition is you have a spirit deck that's basically your resources for the game. And whenever you play cards, you attach the spirits to them, kind of like Pokemon energy, maybe. And when you're out of spirits, you lose the game. So it's almost life decking. It's almost not. And other than that, it's kind of similar to Yu-Gi-Oh! And by kind of similar, I mean very similar.
Okay, so let's pull out some things there. Again, I'm not overly familiar with Elestrals. Obviously, I'm familiar with sort of, you know, the excitement around it, and I'm familiar with obviously who the creator is, and I'm familiar with sort of the broad strokes of it. But let's unpack some stuff there. First of all, you know, it did sound a little bit like a mix of Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh. You said that, you know, you attach your spirit Elestrals to your other Elestrals to give them power and stuff like that. But you also mentioned that you can attack your opponent directly. And you mentioned that the life decking system in Elestrals, or life decking rather, spirit deck. So I assume that there's two separate decks. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yes, there is a spirit deck and your main deck.
Awesome. So when you attack your opponent directly, do they take damage in the form of taking cards off of their spirit deck, which is essentially their energies or lands or anything like their resource cards?
Yeah, so whenever you get attacked directly, you get to choose any the not any. You get to choose the number of damage you've taken cards from the spirit deck and put them in the graveyard. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on what they called it in this game. But the damage you deal directly is based on how many spirits are on the attacking Elestral. So if you have one, you only deal one. It has nothing to do with the Elestral stats itself.
Interesting. So the more powerful a Elestral is, the more vulnerable it becomes to the player.
You don't have to. So every Elestral has like a gem in the center of the card that shows how many spirits need to be under it in order to play it. So a one gem Elestral, you can just play a spirit from your spirit deck on the board and like normal summon like Yu-Gi-Oh! The Elestral to the board. But some of them have two and some of them have three, and you can only use one spirit per turn to like normal summon, like Yu-Gi-Oh! So the next turn, you can get rid of your one spirit Elestral, put another spirit under it, and you know, summon a two spirit Elestral. It also works that in this game, instead of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where double tribute, you have to tribute two monsters no matter what they are, if you have a two spirit Elestral, you can get rid of it and play a three spirit Elestral without needing a second body. Or you could play, you know, three one spirit Elestrals into a three spirit Elestral.
Okay, cool. So you can sort of escalate there. That's really interesting. The other thing, when you're building up your board, you sort of mentioned that you can when you don't have to play a Elestral or a non-spirit Elestral every turn, right?
No, you don't have to play an Elestral every turn. But the spirits, you play the spirits when you play the Elestral. It's like, you know, I'm using one Earth spirit to play, you know, this Rummagem card kind of thing. And it also, you can keep adding more spirits to this. Like, if you just wanted a super spirited out Rummagem, you could just keep putting spirits on it and it'll do more direct damage when you attack. I'm not sure if you'd ever want to do that, but you could do that.
Well, who knows what the where the gameplay goes in the future. This is one of the most exciting things about this indie TCG space is looking at where the designers decide to take their games and how to push and pull in their unique spaces. Now, let me ask you this. So, essentially, the spirit Elestrals sort of act as basically energy cards, but also lands as well, because it sounds like you can play them permanently on the field, but then attach them when you play a creature. Let me ask you this. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird wording, I guess, is they're never on the board by themselves. They're always like used to pay for a cost, so they
Okay.
don't stick around like a land does.
And I've seen a lot of games recently do this sort of like two-deck structure. It feels like it's one of the key points of this sort of indie TCG movement is that we want to take cards that are just basic resources out of the main deck and put them into a separate deck. Games like Sorcery are doing it, games like D-Spirits are doing it, and obviously we're seeing it here again in Alestrals. Tell me a little bit about how that works. Now, do you get to draw one card from your main deck and one card from your spirit deck, or do you get to choose every turn? You tell me about that.
So it's kind of interesting. You never draw from your spirit deck. You just have you have 20 cards in your spirit deck, and you have, you know, your spells and Alestrals, I keep wanting to say monsters, in your hand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So everything has like a number of gems in the center of the card. So whenever you need to pay a cost, you just get rid of that many spirits from your spirit deck. It could be any of them that you want. And there's different elements in the game, and you need the right element to get the ability on your Alestrals. So mm-hmm. you can play a wind spirit on an earth Alestral, but it won't have any of its abilities. That's called misenchanting.
Okay.
But so you're like, oh no, you know, I only have earth Alestrals left in my hand, and I only have two earth spirits, and I'm taking damage or need to pay a cost, so I'm going to get rid of this water one instead.
Interesting. Okay, so let me just think through that for a second. So the interesting thing about that is, so you would play your Alestral deck, is that, your spirit deck, your spirit deck, is that shuffled, or can you go through and choose?
It's not shuffled. You can, anytime you need to go into the spirit deck, you just pick the whole thing up like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Extra deck, and you're like, I don't want this one, I don't want this one, that kind of thing.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you know that you have X amount of resources that are here, you can use them at any point, but as you start to whittle down, you're like, alright, well I really need like a green Alestral right now, but I just burnt all four of my green Alestral sort of spirits in this last turn. That's a really fascinating idea. I'm excited about that. So we've sort of talked about some of the inspiration it took. You know, obviously you mentioned that it is very much like a Pokemon sort of, but mostly Yu-Gi-Oh, like 20% Pokemon, 80% Yu-Gi-Oh. Tell me about what this game really feels special to you for. Why does it feel like it's one of the games that stands out amongst this huge amount of noise in the indie TCG space?
It just hits a weird space in Yu-Gi-Oh! That none of the other games seem to hit, where other games either go too far back to where you're just set past kind of 2002 Yu-Gi-Oh! Or they're hit like 2017 Yu-Gi-Oh! Where, you know, you play your whole hand turn one and, you know, crazy stuff happens. So this one's kind of in the middle ground, where I think they've got a pretty good base set that's not too crazy or too boring, and they can expand from there. And that, I think, is why I picked this game.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so it honestly, like from your description, it does make me sound, it does make me feel a little bit more excited for it. I had sort of discounted it as a little bit more of a Pokemon clone than what you've mentioned. So I'm excited to go. Exactly. I'm glad that you were able to write that misconception in my mind. Again, like I said, it's so hard to keep up with so many games coming out right now about what each and every one of them does. And that's exactly why you're here right now, to help educate me and the listeners and the viewers to what is out there at the moment and what sounds really cool. And I really do think Alestral sounds excellent. So before we sort of step away from Alestrals, though, is there anything else you wanted to add about that game?
Not really. I think that about covers it. You know, it's a pretty cool game. It's like the second most funded Kickstarter TCG behind Sorcery, I think. So mm-hmm. I wanted to have one of those high profile games on there.
Awesome. So let me ask you this then as well. Like, where is it at the moment? So it has had a very successful Kickstarter. And obviously you've got cards currently. Are they the ones that have shipped from the Kickstarter? Like, can you speak to where it is as far as availability goes?
So they had a small run of like test decks where there was like five starter decks. So that's what I've been fiddling around on camera whenever I have to show something. But they are in the middle of fulfilling their, no, maybe not fulfilling is not the right word. I think August is their date at the latest to have everything. The creator on the Alestrals YouTube channel posts like every time they do anything. So they have playmats and plushes already. They're just waiting on the cards, I think.
Awesome. Well, I mean, the posting about anytime anything happens is a great value to having your lead designer, your creator, being a content creator, right? But it's obviously second nature for them and everything, as far as, like, you know, making sure that a community is involved and stuff like that. And I think that if you want to get involved in the Illustrious community, I think it's, as a listener or a viewer, it is obviously going to be one of those ones that definitely focuses on building a community.
Point that I want to say real quick is that there was, like, a pretty, you know, sizable people talking about the game and people playing the game and people testing the decks for the first set, which a lot of indie games maybe don't have as much of that. I know this one comes from a big YouTuber, so it's way easier to get, you know, a dedicated player base. But I guess that's another reason that I thought this one was doing pretty well, is that people were talking about playing and deck building. And
yeah, exactly. You don't find, you know, $1.3 million worth of funding just from being a YouTuber. You know, like, I mean, we see... There is going to be more, you know, content creator style games in the future, but this is one of the first examples that really feels like it, obviously from what you've told me, seems like it's one worth watching. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of care taken. Obviously the community is going to be front and center. I hope it sees its way into distribution and wide release, but, you know, time will tell. But Illustrious will definitely be pick number 5 from you, Peter. Thank you so much. So before we jump into the... Well, no, let's just do it. Let's jump right into pick number 4. So pick number 4 for you, for as far as indie trading card games for 2023 to watch. What is your pick number 4?
All right, I'm going from the highest profile to probably the smallest profile here. I have Boundless.
Okay, so I mean, I have seen Boundless around. Tell me a little bit about Boundless, but before we jump into it, what is the theme? What is Boundless's gameplay and theme trying to communicate?
The theme, there's lots of dragons and monsters and that kind of thing. I'm sorry, that's about as good as I can give you on the theme. I think you're fighting over a plane or a planet or something. I'm not too much on lore, but the gameplay... In Boundless, you have a savior, which is like a leader character that starts on the board, and it's got some effects, and you power it up throughout the game, and when the time is right, you flip it over and become Boundless to its other side, and it gets more abilities, and it really has that, like, current Yu-Gi-Oh! Again kind of combo style where you do this, play this card to, you know, activate this effect from the void or the graveyard, drop zone, that's what it is. Hey, it's hard to keep up with all these card games graveyard names.
You're telling
the
me.
Drop zone, you activate the effect to do this, to do that, and it has that kind of feel to it.
Awesome. Okay, so I have taken a very, very short look at Boundless, and all of the savior cards, if I'm not mistaken, are double-sided. So your sort of hero card, if you're coming from Flesh and Blood, or, you know, if you're coming from universes, you know, your, you know, or My Hero Academia, I guess it is sort of primarily nowadays, you know, your character card is always going to be double-sided. So the goal of the game is to get your savior onto its other side first, fulfill its conditions, and then play its more powerful effects. Is that correct?
Right. Sometimes there's even games where you're like, I kind of like my bound side's effect. I think I might not go Boundless just so I can keep getting this effect on this side. So it's not just a, you know, you get to the, you reach the meter and you slam the super attack. You just sometimes need to stay... You got to think about it.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that there is that strategic depth as well. You know, there isn't always going to be that one track that, boom, my Boundless guy is, my Bound guy has now become Boundless. I am going to be somebody who is going to just rip because I was the first one to sort of win that race. You can sort of have this battle of attrition and sort of, you know, figure out how these mechanics are going to work with your own cards and stuff like that. Now, the other thing I found really interesting about Boundless as well is you're sort of playing your savior, but also you can have sort of other units, or I think they're called figures. I can't remember what they're exactly called in this. Forms. That's exactly right. So you can have forms, and you can also have command cards, which act like a spell or trap card or whatnot, or an instant, or, you know, sorcery card in Magic the Gathering. And they sort of help your sort of gameplay as well. And it sort of does look a little bit like it takes a lot of inspiration from not only Yu-Gi-Oh!, but some of those other sort of, like, a little bit more left of center sort of Japanese card games, some of those Bushiroad ones like you know, Wei Schwartz, or ones like Card Fight Vanguard, where it does use a lot of that sort of same terminology and sort of visual layout and stuff. And it, again, to speak to Yu-Gi-Oh as well, it also has sort of like a if I'm not mistaken, a tribute summoning sort of mechanic as well, where your forms are, your lower forms are falling to your, you know, higher forms and stuff like that, but your Boundless is always a consistent hero.
Right. I would say it reminds me of Buddy Fight. I didn't play a whole lot of Buddy Fight. I've just played a couple of the starter decks, but it does remind me of Buddy Fight. You have two form zones where you can play forms, and it does have a tributing type system where you can only play level zero form, but then you can, you know, chuck that to play a level one form. But then there's lots of effects that can, like, cheat out the higher level forms depending on the game. The win condition is interesting, and I also put it next to Elestrals because it's similar but completely different. In Boundless, you have a spirit deck. And you do draw from it, and you can put, you know, one spirit under your forms or your savior every turn per thing. So you can if you have three spirits in your hand, you can put one under your savior and both your forms. So it's not it's only limited to one per being, I guess. And when you get seven spirits in your void area, which is like the spirit's own discard, then you lose the game. So you don't deck out, and this deck is shuffled, and there's different types of spirits. So it's a little bit different, even though it's a spirit deck that's a second deck that you lose when a certain amount of cards leave it. But it doesn't function anything the same as Elestrals.
No, it's so interesting as well. And I did take a quick look at Boundless as well. And I do like this mechanic. Again, it sort of feels like it pulls on that same thread as sort of Elestrals does, where it's like the more powerful the being, if it gets defeated, the closer you are to losing. Which is sort of something that, like, you know, Pokemon had sort of lent in the last couple of years. You know, you had GX cards and then team up cards where it's like, you know, it's a 2-prize Pokemon or a 3-prize Pokemon. It does sort of seem like it's accelerating the gameplay with more powerful creatures, which is not the case in something like, I mean, I guess it is in some ways with Yu-Gi-Oh with power level as far as attack damage goes, but at the same time it does feel like it's crafting its own space here. And I do like the fact that they go off to the void zone, and it's sort of like a reverse sort of shield mechanic, you know, like we see in something like Digimon or Duel Masters or something like that. It's sort of like you're building up to fill your void to lose, rather than like chopping down like you would in one of those two games I just mentioned. So it is really fascinating, and I am loving the innovation I'm seeing out of the indie TCG side. The one thing I will call out, though, is it is a yet another game that has the two-deck system. And that's such an interesting thing, where one deck is going to be your main deck cards and one deck is going to be your resource cards. And it's so interesting to see so many people who have gone from being a player to a designer or a manager or a CEO of a trading card game company really embrace that. Obviously, that was something that these other games were really grading on them as far as you know, your resources within your deck. There's no top decking a dead card, basically, and stuff like that. How do you feel about that sort of innovation in this indie TCG space?
I definitely think the resource systems are what seems to change the most. Being in, like, the HTCG Discord and, like, the indie game scene, that's, like, the number one complaint, I feel like, is, you know, mana flood, mana screw, not, you know, having dead cards. So every game tries to fix that, and some of them fix it in, you know, different ways. And the two deck system, thanks Force of Will, is a pretty popular one.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's fascinating is, like, those sort of basic resource cards are always so lauded as being such a sticking point for players. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to draw my land this turn. I don't want to draw my energy this turn. I don't want to draw anything. But there has been, throughout the history of collectible trading card games, a million different ways, well, not a million literally, but like quite a number of different ways to sort of manage resources. But we're seeing a lot of people lean on the basic resource cards, but in a new way that we haven't really seen too much before. There has been a couple of examples, as you mentioned, Force of Will there and stuff like that. But there's been a couple of different ways to sort of utilize that. And I'm glad that players are sort of taking their own agency after being playing these games for, you know, 20 or 30 years and bringing their own sort of personal experience to it.
Boundless, the resource system, compared to Elestrals, where the spirits are just kind of like basic resource cards, like you were saying, in Boundless, they're not. They have effects. Like, there's one of the basic ones is, like, the Might Spirit gives your form 3,000 extra power. So the last time I was playing, I kept putting Might Spirits on my turtle guy, and I made like the most unstoppable turtle guy ever until somebody hit me with like an unconditional removal that, and like I since there were four spirits attached to that turtle, I just like lost the game off of that because I was like, oh no, you're not supposed to ever put like, you know, more than one or two, because the you're like you were saying, you get into the danger zone where if that guy dies, you just have lost.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you mentioned that, you know, these effect things, because, you know, people who are familiar with games like Pokemon, you know, there's basic energy cards, or even Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic. There's basic land cards, but then there's also special lands, or in Pokemon's case, special energies that always add that sort of, you know, this Pokemon's going to get an extra 30 HP because it's a strength energy or whatever. And I love the fact that that's basically a real integral part to the game, because not only do you think about what resources you need in your sort of, I guess you called it spirit deck, I think is what you called it, but you also think about what the impact of those particular cards as far as an effect goes and your own playstyle. I do really enjoy that.
Right, yeah. Some of them are like when your form kills another form, you can like heal one from your void, put it back in your spirit deck, or like you know hurt the opponent. Or, you know, it can attack twice, stuff like that.
So that's super exciting. So as I was saying before, let's move on to number three for your picks as far as top indie TCGs to watch in 2023. What do we have for number three, Peter?
All right, number three, I have an interesting one. It is Primal, trading card game, I guess. They're all trading card games, or most of them. Mm-hmm. Primal is a almost like copy-paste remake of the old Bandai Naruto TCG game. There was a guy that really liked Naruto, and he's like, man, I'm sad they stopped making Naruto. I'll do it myself. And here we are, you know. Kickstarter, you know, made $40,000, $50,000, and here we come with Primal Naruto 2.
That's amazing. So, I mean, for those who aren't aware, there was in about, I think, 2007, I think it launched, and it lasted about 4 years. There was a Naruto CCG, or collectible card game, that was released by Bandai in the West, and then subsequently also using a very similar sort of rule set. There was a Dragon Ball one that came out in 2009 that was integratable and sort of with some altered rules being able to be compatible with it. So obviously this creator has taken a ton of inspiration from that particular game and ported it over into Primal. So tell me, what is Primal's theme outside of being mechanically inspired by Yu-Gi-Oh? What is the world that this particular creator is trying to create?
It's a fantasy world. There's pirates and plague doctors and waifus and dragons, you know, all the things you would expect.
So obviously there's a whole bunch of these things that are taking inspiration from just generic, not generic fantasy, but like collective fantasy, you know, where there's a whole bunch of different types of fantasy all available in this one. So in Primal though, what are you embodying as a player? Are you a leader of a group of sort of fantasy characters? Are you a specific hero? Tell me about that.
I think you're the leader of a nation, I want to say, and you know, you're playing your factions guys and you're trying to collect battle rewards from your opponent by, you know, attacking them directly or beating their teams of characters.
Okay, so let's talk about the mechanics then. Tell me about what is the sort of, obviously, if people have played Naruto, great for them. But if they haven't, sort of let's break that down for sort of those who aren't familiar with it. So what are, you know, so what are you doing? You're obviously building a board state with units. And what are the resources? What is the victory condition? Tell me about that.
it almost, you could describe it as a creature battler type game, but the way it functions is really different. You play characters, you have spells and that sort of thing. You have battle trick type effects, but the characters go into teams where they have like a number that if they're the leader of the team, that's their power, and a number if they're the supporting character they get. And you can have up to three people per team, and I think you can attack with up to three teams in a turn. So you have to organize how you've assembled your units and attack with them in like certain stacks almost. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot different. And instead of units dying just when they're beaten, In this game, unless they get really badly beaten, they get injured, which changes their stats, and sometimes they lose their effect, sometimes they get a different effect. That's a very unique mechanic to this game system.
I absolutely loved that back in the old Naruto days and stuff like that. And just for those listening as well, what is the goal? So do we have life points? Do we have, is it a life decking system? Is there, just wiping your opponent's board? Tell me about that.
Right, so the win condition in Primal Naruto game is that when you attack and you beat your opponent's teams, or maybe if it's just if you attack directly, your opponent takes cards from their deck and puts them face down as battle rewards. And whenever you have 10 battle rewards, you've won the game.
So it's sort of almost as we were talking before with the void cards in Boundless, obviously there's different signifiers, but, basically the victory condition is tracked by the output that you're being done, but being tracked by your opponent's cards, essentially.
Right. Almost like Vanguard's life points. It's like card as damage kind of thing.
Precisely. Now, my next question would be about what game this takes inspiration from, but I think we all know the answer to that. It is very much tied to the original Naruto TCG, and it is very, very much integrated with that, and I'm so glad that somebody is just willing to just be like, okay, these mechanics are something that I love, this game was something that I loved, I want to expand upon it myself, and I think this is a really unique place to point to, because it's not doing a ton of mechanical innovation, but it is reviving a particular game set that had otherwise been lost to basically time. But before we sort of step away from Primal, I think Primal, as you said, has a bit of a diverse theme. There's, like you said, pirates and waifus and dragons and all sorts of stuff. But tell me, what is it about Primal's version of itself that appeals to you? And what do you like about it sort of beyond what the Naruto CCG was?
Ooh, that's a pretty spicy question there. I mean, obviously you can't, Naruto's an expensive game now. You can't get Naruto anymore. So if you want to play that game system, you're playing it digitally or you're paying a lot of money. So that the whole game system to me is pretty interesting, but other than Naruto, I'm not sure. The game is literally Naruto.
which it is definitely one thing.
I don't think the creator is taking offense to that. He's just like, yeah, I like Naruto, so let's do it again.
Well, that's fantastic. And obviously, Naruto had, if I'm not mistaken, something in the ballpark of 30 odd sets. So obviously, if he is a somebody who is highly engaged in that game, he has probably learned a lot of lessons from what works in that rule set and what doesn't work. So hopefully, I mean, like I said, I don't know the guy personally, but hopefully he is able to take what he has learned from years of playing Naruto, and literally, I would probably estimate something in the ballpark of 2,500, 3,000 cards, and be able to create and bring something new to that space. And I'm so excited to see what somebody would do. And I hope this isn't the first time we see this sort of mechanical reinvention, because there has been a lot of people on this show, this network, through Booster Pack Throwback or, previously the Booster Pack podcast, that have told me that you can't really, patent or copyright trading card game mechanics. So these are things that you are freely available to do. I don't think Bandai has any recourse against Primal legally about the fact that he has just recreated their own game, but with his own art, with his own terminology and stuff like that. As long as he doesn't use terms that are trademarked or imagery that is proprietary, he is free to do that. And I would love to see other communities get together and sort of recreate the games that they love in their own original way and see what they can bring to this space and see how they can replaster these mechanics into a whole new context. How do you feel about that, Peter?
For sure. There's definitely some bits from old games. I'm like, ooh, that'd be really neat if you did this again. Like, if you're familiar with On the Edge, from 1994 or 5, the way that game has like a grid, but it's like a soft grid. It's only a grid in relation to the other cards you have played. That'd be amazing if they'd bring that. Somebody would bring that back. But I also guess that you said it way better than I should have said it, that how they expand from the Naruto game is something to look forward to. I know the creator has been building his team from people that were really in the Naruto community. So I think they'd have a good idea of where to go from that game.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, as we've seen from in other genres of art, you know, whether it's Quentin Tarantino in film or, you know, whatever, you know, fans make the best creators when it comes to expanding upon what's already existed. And I love the fact that these guys are so passionately able to engage with this game and this rule set in the way that they have. And you know, you mentioned On the Edge there. I'm a big fan. Hopefully, you know, to all you viewers, episode coming soon about it. You know, we'll see. I'm in discussions. Hopefully we see, like I said, more communities sort of re-envision those games. There are communities out there at the moment, you know, take Shadow Fist, for example, which was a classic collectible card game from the mid-90s. There is a company of fans that had bought that. It's a little turbulent at the moment, but they've bought the rights to it and they are able to recreate it. Other games include sort of games like, you know, obviously Legend of the Five Rings got rebought by another company and sort of reworked. But things like Seventh Sea's branding got rebought, but was redesigned as a game. And there's a ton of player committees as well. So if this new indie TCG wave is a way to continue these games, and perhaps even take Naruto cards and make them compatible with Primal in some way, that could be exciting, even if it's in a casual context, for the players of those old Naruto games. Do you happen to know if that is a possibility in the current way that Primal is set up?
I think that you could play Naruto cards with Primal, I think.
Obviously you would have to just alter whatever terminology it is, whether you were a Shininja or Ninja or Shigenja or whatever it is, versus a advanced character or whatever the terminology in Primal is, I'm sure. But yeah, they sound super exciting and accessible. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about Primal at this point?
No, I think that covers it. I'm sorry, I don't have a whole lot to say. I'm like, wow, it's Naruto again. You know, that's cool.
Absolutely. And Naruto is, of course, expensive because it is still an enduring brand to this day. You know, they're still creating new content with Baruto and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of those games are going to... Those rule sets, I think, is what we really need to hammer down here. Those rule sets are going to fall by the wayside if there isn't something, whether it's a player committee where you're doing print and play cards or something like Primal where you're completely recrafting the rule set. Those rule sets are going to fall by the wayside. Those designers' works are going to completely be lost to time because, you know, a single booster pack is $80 or something ridiculous like that. There is a bunch of games where that is actually the legitimate case.
It's also an old Bandai game, and I'm pretty sure in, like, the mid-2000s to, like, you know, 2015, they printed, like, 4 of all of their games' booster boxes, so...
As somebody who tracks that sort of stuff, you are not too far from being correct. Despite the fact that those games were all sold in mass market as well, they were incredibly limited. Obviously, I see you have the Gundam Wing game that you're showing on screen at the moment, and that's an...
This is empty. I have never found a Gundam War set 2 or 3 box in the couple of years I've, you know, been looking. Not a single one.
Yeah, they are definitely one of the rarer prizes, and of course... Any of those games that were short printed that have a huge fan base outside of the game itself are going to have collectors, and they're always going to be a bit of a teeth pull when it comes to finding those games. Now, let's jump on to game number 4, our penultimate game on your list. What is your fourth pick for the trading card game or card game to watch in 2023?
All right, my second pick, I said since we started at 5, I'm cheating. I'm picking Varia. It's a expandable card game, so there's no booster packs, but, you know, it plays, you know, similar-ish, so I thought I'd throw it on here. Varia is a fighting-style card game, but you don't have a player character card. You are the player character card. That's how they market it. It's a first-person fighting card game, so you are the Volcanic Warrior or the Shadow Assassin or whatever it is that you were playing.
That's so cool. Now, this is one of those ones that I'm a little bit more familiar with than the other ones you've mentioned so far. Now, the reason I say that is because when I was at PAX Unplugged recently, I did have a chance to have a demo, and you do get these cool character decks. A lot of your cards that you're playing are basically actions that your character would take. And the great thing I love about this game, and I'll let you get into it when we get into some of the mechanics, is that you are really, literally, moment by moment embodying your character. But before we jump into that, tell me about what is the theme of Laria? What is the world the game is trying to create? What are the designers trying to express through the theme and narrative of the game?
I think Varia is another fantasy game, but what they do with the classes, like, you know, the bard in Varia is like a heavy metal cyborg chicken guy. And it's just crazy what they do. They just have been revealing the Artificer class, and it's like a little girl with a giant robot bear. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. You know, there's like a psychic fencer class where they're also kind of robotic, and it's like, where are they coming up with these classes? But I love it.
So tell me, is it just, is there a reason that I am fighting my opponent, like narratively wise? Or is it just like, we are two really powerful people who live in this world that have a conflict for no particular reason?
I'm going to go with that because I'm not sure. when I was, you know, preparing for today, I didn't think about, you know, the lore of the games very much.
And that's absolutely fine. It's always just a broad question I like to ask, because obviously sometimes that's a hook for people coming in. But let's talk about the mechanics. Now, like I said, I did have the luxury of being able to playtest this with the designers at a recent convention I was at. But I want you to sort of tell the audience, and even reiterate it with me, because I only played it twice. What is the mechanics like? You know, you sort of mentioned before that I am fighting my opponent. I am the Shadow Assassin. I am the Volcanic Warrior, or whatever it was. But how is that expressed on the table? Tell me about why it's interesting and why I called out the word moment before.
Right. So fighting game, you people think of Flesh and Blood now. I feel like this game plays completely differently than Flesh and Blood. In this game, the most fun way I can describe how it plays is both characters almost are Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes, where they almost are like predicting the future, or, you know, thinking about what's going to happen. So the turn player will play out their different attacks, and each one is a different moment in time. So you're like, I'm going to kick my opponent, and then I'm going to hit him with my big battle axe. And then the off-turn player sees that, and they get to determine what their reactions are. And they're like, okay, you're going to kick me? I'm going to jump out of the way, and then we're not together anymore, so your battle axe is just going to miss. And then the attacking player gets it back for like a reaction phase, and they're like, okay, so you think you're gonna jump away from me? I'm actually gonna change my first action from a kick to a chain pull, where I'm gonna pull you into me, so where when you try to jump away, we're still close together, and then my axe is gonna hit you again. So it's like a back and forth shadow game.
Now, the thing I loved about it is very innovative in that space. I do think that there is a lot of things that this game brings to the table that I haven't really seen, where these moments sort of are the resource, really. It's like how long it takes you to swing that hammer is what it costs you to play it. Not necessarily, but how long it takes you to jump out of the way might be way more easier, but you still need the cards to do that. I love the way that they've decided to lock this down. Now, can you point to any sort of games that you've seen before or anything else that you would sort of relate as far as this particular game is sort of riffing off or sort of really being, you know, inspired by?
Well, there's dice involved in the combat, and the only thing I can think of that has that kind of thing is maybe like Warlord's Saga of the Storm. I've never played that game, so I could be so far off on that, but not really. This game, it seems pretty unique as far as that goes. Most of the fighting card games are like, you know, I play my attack card, and then the other person's like, I play my defense card, and it goes back and forth kind of like that. But this one's like, you know, here's my four turn attack, different attacks, and then they have to block all of them, and that's how the turns work.
It's really interesting. I love it as well. I mean, it does feel like it's also sort of got like, if people have played things like, you know, Soulforge, or there's a number of other games, even trading card games, that have sort of lane-based combat, where it's like, this is the lane for this turn, this is the lane for that turn, and, you know, if you can't block here, I'm going to hit you directly, and then back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that's exactly sort of what this feels like. So card games like with lane-based combat are entirely similar, but not exactly the same. And I do feel like this game, I will let this one pass as on a trading card game show as an expandable game. You can buy full decks and stuff like that. I'm not sure if you can customize.
To answer your question, that's another thing I like about this game is the main format is literally just take the Volcanic Warrior out of the box. It's like a fighting game, like a video game. Just here's your moveset, you know, play with it. I think they're working more towards a constructed format, but the main format so far is just take it out of the box and play it.
And I love that as well. Like, you know, it does have that very gritty and very spiky trading card game feel. This is a game that's going to appeal to people who love to strategize. This isn't a necessarily, it's definitely a Spike Johnny game, definitely not a Timmy game. It's something where it's like there's no big monsters on the cards or anything like that. It's all about sort of how you strategize and plan your turn.
I'm not sure about that. The Volcanic Warrior that I've been showing off has a card called Decapitate. And if you roll the highest thing you can roll, you do infinity damage to your opponent. So they have to, like, get out of the way or, you know, do something to avoid getting decapitated. So there is a little bit of, you know, Timmy Johnny in there.
Yeah, there definitely is. Actually, you know what? That's a really good point. I do remember actually being demoed that exact deck at PAX Unplugged, and I remember the guy expressing it to me, but when I rolled, I got nowhere near it. He's like, this could be a big moment, and I was like, I was very excited about it, but that's really cool. Is there anything else you want to say about this, or specifically about what appeals to you about it as far as this game goes?
I think we missed the win condition, which is just you have 30 health, I think, 20, 30 health. You have health and you have to make your opponents go to zero. So a pretty basic win condition. The resource system is, yeah, you get 10 action points and every card has a certain action point cost in the corner. And that's how you determine what you can do in a turn. But yeah, I like the... just take it out of the box and play it. When I play a lot of games and I can't learn the, you know, intricacies of the meta. I know some people don't like that though, but that's why they're starting their constructed formats. They run game nights on their Discord, so you can play online with people. It's just a pretty unique take on the fighting card game, I think.
I 100% agree. Like I said, as somebody who's had the chance to actually get my hands on those cards and play it really, you know, in the moment, it is really exciting. It might not be exactly my style of gameplay because, you know, you don't have constructed decks or anything like that. But at the same time, I do think that they've brought something very unique to the world of sort of, you know, constructed combat card games, or at least they will. And I can't wait to sort of see where it goes in the future. And I hope to see them at more conventions in as time moves forward. So that sort of brings us to the end of number one. I cannot wait to hear what your number one is. Tell me all about what is your number one pick for card game, trading card game especially, to watch in 2023, Peter.
All right, my number one pick, not that I really ordered these in any sort of order, is Runeslingers, another fighting style card game. I tried to group the light games together, but this one is more different than the last, as a funny YouTube video once said. I call it the rock game because a lot of the cards are runes, which are, you know, on rocks or things like that.
Okay, so tell me about a little bit about, like, so bring me into the world of Runeslingers. What is the world we're looking at here?
The world, you are a Runeslinger. You sling the magical abilities of the world that are, you know, on these runes. I hope I'm not making that last part up, but yeah, and I'm not... You're fighting another Runeslinger. That's what I got there. There's different factions, different colors of cards in the game, you know.
Absolutely. So my understanding of Runeslingers is that every time you play a game, it is a tournament of the Runeslingers who live in the world that the game embraces. So you're getting dragged into, you want to prove to be the absolute best. Every battle is like, you know, the final battle in a tournament or something like that. And much like, you know, we mentioned before with Boundless, there is actual ratherly uniquely formatted sort of hero card. So why don't you tell me a little bit about mechanics and how, you know, that hero card plays a sort of a Runeslinger card, I guess it is, sort of plays a big role in the game and how the game works.
All right, so in Runeslingers, yeah, you have a character card that has their own ability. You have a stance and another special ability card that go next to your character that also provide more, bonus type things. And then the victory condition is really interesting to me because it's to get your opponent from 5 power down to 0. And to lose a power, you can hit them enough times that their HP goes to 0 and they lose a power and their HP resets. You can deck them out and they lose a power and they shuffle their discard pile and it goes back in. Or the game's uniquest mechanic, if they start their turn with 7 or more ailments, they lose a power and lose 7 ailments. So there are multiple avenues to victory in this game. You could be having a deck out war, or, you know, just hitting them, or trying to, you know, make them feel real bad with the ailments.
So ailments are basically like independent cards that I think are a general pool for everybody. I think everybody, you know, whether you start a game or whatnot, you're not starting with your two decks. You're also starting with a pile of ailments, whether that's weakness or poison or whatever on the side. What do those cards do when they interact with the game? Do they go in your deck? Do they just go on a pile on the side, sort of as we spoke before, like Void? Or how does that work?
They have their own slots on the board that mm-hmm. the ailments go on, and they tick up with dice. You can have multiple stacks of, like, burning on you. And mm-hmm. all the ailments, if you have a certain amount on you, it does worse things. Like, I think burn just hurts you when your burn is applied. But if you get 7 burn, then it starts doing a crazier effect that I can't remember mm-hmm. right now. I'm sorry. There's one that's, like, I think it's curse. When you get 7 curse on you, you skip the phase of your turn where you check to see if you had 7 ailments and remove them. So you can just, like, keep putting more ailments on them kind of thing. So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
That's really cool. It really reminds me of things like, not quite the same, but deck building games where, you know, like Dominion or something like that, where you're getting curses in amongst the game, or, you know, Legendary, where you're getting wounds and you're sort of being hindered by these outside elements that are really impacting your character. And, you know, we sort of mentioned the character before. You mentioned that they had special sort of cards that go alongside them, and rather than, you know, there's an X number of characters, but there is a multitude of other sort of things that you can equip them with, whether they want to be a specialist in this particular type, or, you know, somebody who has this particular type of weapon or something like that. I think that's really exciting. So tell me a little bit more about the mechanics. You know, you mentioned that there is a number of victory conditions, but tell me, do you think there's any other games that you've ever played that is similar to this one, or do you think it's rather unique in this particular space?
I think this one is kind of unique too. The resource system I find to be really cool, which I guess I'll talk about now. It kind of has that every card is resource, where you can put any card of your hand as a resource. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a secondary part to it, where, you know, you tap your resources for the cards that you're going to play. You play spells and stuff like that. But you have to play the cards on top of the resources. So you can only ever play as many attacks or effects, abilities, whatever, cards, as you have resources.
Yeah, no, it sounds super exciting. So tell me a little bit, what is it about... there is a lot of things that appeal to me about Runeslingers, and obviously we've talked about mechanics and we've talked about themes so far, but obviously visually it is a beautiful game and honestly has a very passionate creator behind it. What is it about your experience that is appealing about this particular game to you, and what makes it the literal last game on your list?
I think it's the multiple win conditions. I know games usually have a deck out, but that's like, you know, make sure that the game ends at some point kind of thing, that, you know, it's not the main victory condition, where here it seemed like all three avenues were viable to trying to win the game. I don't know if that holds up competitively, but casually it was like, oh, it's really cool. I could, you know, I could just go for damage or deck out, or, you know, there's also like a banish pile kind of thing. So like, I could just banish you and run you out of cards and you can't do anything anymore. So just seems wide open. There's different colors in the game, but there's no restrictions on like what color cards you can run. You don't need a green character to play green cards. So it was really wide open.
It's really cool to see that there is this sort of almost infinite sort of gameplay possibilities, especially with the hero, and then you're able to customize that hero with 2 other sort of specific cards as well. And I'm really excited to see where this game goes. Like I said, it looks beautiful. It is probably, you know, one of the most impressively presented products in this indie TCG space at the moment, outside of those sort of really top tier games in it and in general. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'll definitely be following Runeslingers as well, which is, it's had its Kickstarter, right?
Yes. They should be I think they're waiting for the cards to literally ship from I think China to here, so it should be fulfilling soon, TM.
Okay, well, cool. So keep an eye out if you're interested in this game or any of the others. Again, all going to be linked in the description of this or show notes of this episode. Check that out, and obviously this is going to be one that I'm excited, and I hope I do see in local game stores at some point. There is a lot of noise in this space at the moment, and I hope this episode has helped you as a listener and us as players sort of cut through some of that noise and sort of try to narrow down some of the greater innovations in this space at the moment. So before we get out of here, Peter, is there anything else you want to say about Runeslingers?
But yeah, it's just a really cool game.
That's awesome. It does look really, really cool. I can't wait to try it out myself. I actually haven't had a chance, but I've been following it they've been around for, I think even pre-pandemic. They've been doing this sort of stuff in the background for a long time, and I'm really glad to see that their hard work has started to pay off.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's one of those games that has been tested a lot, and you can kind of tell that it's been tested a pretty good amount.
Well, that gives me so much confidence in it moving forward. And like I said, I hope that it becomes something that we see in a retail level and we see them having presence at conventions and stuff like that moving forward. Obviously, the trading card game market is incredibly competitive at the moment, but those who stick to it, you know, build it and they will come. You know, it's the old Field of Dreams story. So before we get out of here, Peter, tell me a little, obviously you are highly engaged in the trading card game space, whether that is old or new, like we've talked about today. Tell me a little bit about Card Game Crypt, which is your YouTube channel. Why can people, obviously people will be able to find it linked in the description, but tell me a little bit what they can expect when they go find it.
On Card Game Crypt, the original idea was to, you know, talk about dead card games that haven't been talked about. But then, like, right as I had, you know, that idea, boom, indie card games everywhere. And I'm like, shoot, I'll talk about the new game. So Card Game Crypt talking about things that are alive. But, you know, that's how it works. I have kind of reviews on games. They're all, like, highly edited. I try to, you know, do that, too. I don't see a whole lot of it in the scene where I write scripts. I, you know, do camera stuff, whatever. I have how to plays for indie games. If you need a how to play, contact me. I have gameplay videos where it's like IRL, you know, camera on the table kind of thing. That I also try to edit out the dead space, put some like cool graphics where like, you know, if I shoot a gun, the big card comes up and pew, sound effects, stuff like that. So that's pretty much what you can expect from my channel. Card Game Crypt, youtube.com/C or at Card Game Crypt. I forgot how they do it now.
Well, for those who also have forgotten now that they have tags and stuff like that, again, it is linked in the description. And I want to just say to Peter's channel, he has an amazing ability. He has great energy bringing you into these games. So much enthusiasm for the products that we're talking about. And I absolutely love the way that he approaches these games. And in some cases, he is the only video about some of these obscure games, or the only one worth watching, really. So I just want to say that, you know, Peter is an amazing resource. Please check him out. Card Game Crypt on YouTube. You could probably Google it. Just Card Game Crypt, all one word, YouTube. Boom, you'll find it. But again, if you're even lazier than that, find it linked in the description. So it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Peter, today. Is there anything else you want to add before we leave?
Thanks for having me. I explain things way better on YouTube, by the way. So like this guy can't even say two sentences.
That's all right. There's a different thing when it's a little bit more live than when it is scripted, but we do appreciate it. And I think you shared a whole bunch of amazing knowledge. And honestly, regardless of what the listeners think, I am very appreciative that you've shared your sort of experience, because you're in there, you're in the Discords, you're in there play testing these games, not even before they're released, not even before the Kickstarter goes out. You're sort of got your sort of toe in the water well before any of us other actual card game players have a chance to even play with physical cards. So for that, A, I'm appreciative, and B, I'm appreciative for the content that you make, because this is a new space that we're evolving into, and somebody like yourself tracking it is absolutely amazing. So before we get out of here, last thing is a goodbye from me. Goodbye from you, Peter.
Bye-bye, viewers. I'll be listening on the next episode, or whenever you get the, you know, the On the Edge thing, maybe.
Well, hopefully that happens. I've definitely had some conversations about some people who were involved in the early days of that game, and we're just trying to lock down time. So don't hold your breath, but we're going to see. All right, so that is it for me as well. I'm going to say goodbye, and remember, until next time, this has been the Rare Slot on the Booster Pack Network. I've been Rans, but the thing you need to remember the most is keep shuffling.